Committee will come to order for Friday, March 18, 2005. We're going to change the order from what is listed on the agenda today. We'll be doing a public hearing on House Bill 2624, very brief, very quick. Then we'll move to possible reconsideration of work session on House Bill 2339. Then we'll move to a public hearing on House Bill 2571. So we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2624. Mr. Keller.
House Bill 2624 modifies basis for calculating amount of grant awarded to qualified students for purposes of Oregon Opportunity Grant, declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2005, and it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Representative March.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Steve March. I represent House District 46 in the center of Portland. I appreciate you scheduling this bill. Unfortunately, I have a time crunch, but I am going to also, I find that there are some needed amendments to this. I'm going to be working with the parties to amend the bill to reflect and understand standing that has been reached between the public and private institutions, community colleges, and the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. So I'll be back once we get those amendments ironed out, and it turns out this is a necessary bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I see no further testimony to be heard on House Bill 2624, so we will close the public hearing, and happy journeys and trails to you.
Have a good trip.
Okay, we will open a work session on House Bill 2339.
Madam Chair, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2339.
Representative Dalla moves that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2339. Is there any objection? So moved. Yeah, it's now in order to accept a motion on the reconsideration.
Madam Chair, I move we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2339 was sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation and rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Representative Dalum moves that we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2339 was sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation and rescinding the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Okay, Madam Chair, what's the rescinding sending to Ways and Means? Could you explain to me?
When we made the original motion for the due pass, it was to also rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. After we submitted the paperwork, it came back with a critical, and it could not be rescinded. So we have to bring it back for reconsideration.
All right, thank you.
Okay. There are no further questions. Those are of the opinion that we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2339 was sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation and rescinding the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. We'll vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Lem.
Aye.
Representative
Roland.
Aye.
Representative
Keel.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries and the vote has been reconsidered. And we will close the work session on House Bill 2339. And we move, therefore, expeditiously to a public hearing on House Bill 2571. Mr. Keller, can you give us an overview?
Yes, ma'am. House Bill 2571 directs school districts to adopt policies governing use of police officers and crisis teams to restrain or remove child with disability from school grounds, sets requirements for policies.
Did I officially gavel? Public hearing open.
And it has a subsequent referral to judiciary.
Okay. And then I have Nancy Latini.
Good afternoon, Representative Flores, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Latini. I'm the Assistant Superintendent for the Office of Student Learning and Partnerships at the Department of Education. I'm here today to talk to you about House Bill 2571. It's being introduced by the Oregon Advocacy Center and addresses what they perceive as a problem with school districts inappropriately involving the police and student behavior control, particularly students with disabilities. The bill requires districts to add policies and procedures governing the use of police officers and crisis teams to restrain or to remove students with disabilities from school grounds. It also requires the districts to submit these policies and procedures to the department for approval. The department would be charged in oversight of a problematic bill in our mind. The department has interest, of course, in safe schools and definitely in providing appropriate behavioral supports to students with disabilities. For example, the department just completed a statewide training to school districts on behavior crisis teams, and Mr. Keller has a copy of the manual, which is also available on CD. But what we're hoping is that by training trainers in school districts and them taking it out to the community, we're addressing some of the issues around collaboration of law enforcement, of other public service agencies and school districts in dealing with kids with disabilities. The bill creates additional structure and procedural issues for school districts, and I'll give you a couple of examples of those. It limits the school districts from calling police to control a student with a disability to circumstances where the behavior of the student, and this is a quote from the law, poses an immediate threat or serious physical injury to a person, and the student cannot be safely controlled by school personnel. This is problematic because the definition is very ambiguous. We would think that this would be applied inconsistently across the districts as well as across the state. A better approach for us is to assure that training is provided to staff relative to de-escalation strategies and hoping that we can avoid some of the things that are being called for as far as student behaviors are concerned. This bill, again, as I said, would limit school districts in using their own discretion as to when they need to call police in order to keep their schools safe. The bill also requires districts to create an individualized school crisis team for each student with a disability who has a history or likelihood of aggressive behavior. This is also a problem as districts, for the most part, already have crisis teams that are district-wide and are fairly well-trained teams that have been going on for a long time. Individual teams would create some redundancy and probably inconsistent responses for districts. If a school predicted that a student had these kind of behaviors or saw these behaviors, they really need to be addressed in the student's individual education plan. And in that plan also should be the behavioral strategies that they use. And it should also include instances where, if police needed to be called, that could be written into the IEP that certain behaviors would cause a need to call law enforcement for support. The law also requires the crisis teams to develop a single-page behavior guide with de-escalation strategies specific to each child and to provide these to the police officer called on to intervene. It's difficult for me to imagine a police officer taking the time to read this page when they're called in a crisis situation. Again, a better solution would be to educate all law enforcement around disabilities, obvious behaviors that maybe are some strategies that we could use to de-escalate those behaviors. It prohibits the districts from initiating or participating in juvenile or adult court proceedings that severely that serve to discipline a student with a disability or to remove that student from the student's current educational placement. This is ambiguous because, from what I understand, it's the individual education plan and the IEP team that writes this plan that makes and determines the educational placement for the student. It also asks the districts to monitor and maintain records of contact between students with disabilities and police officers or the courts resulting in behavioral incidents in school, including the cause and outcomes of these contacts. This is a problem as it would place an undue paperwork burden on school districts for information that oftentimes they don't have ready access to. Schools already do have a maintained behavioral records on students relative to the information that they can access. Additional burden on the schools wouldn't serve any purpose that I can see to improve student behavior or to improve the behaviors of those students. And finally, the districts, again, it would be required that they offer police training to police officers on the general characteristics of students with disabilities, some of the aggressive behaviors and de-escalation techniques. This is an example of something that really is important to do, and we would be willing to work with Oregon Advocacy Center and with school districts to create some kind of a training packet that could go to law enforcement to use during their regular training sessions. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you might have them.
Any questions for Ms. Latini?
Yes.
Nancy, do you know...
Representative Gollum.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The gravity of this issue is deeply concerning, but having sat in on IEP meetings, aren't these issues... I mean, if we know we have a student with this propensity, isn't that part of the plan, usually?
Representative Flores, Representative Dahlin, yes, it should be. It absolutely should be. And in some cases, perhaps even the decision of making a placement someplace other than the school, if they're that severe.
And I doubt that... do you have any notion of how many... Pardon me, Madam Chairman, follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank
Representative
you
Dahlin.
Do you have any notion of how many of these incidents we're dealing with? Is this... widespread problem, or is this isolated example?
Representative Flores, members of the committee, when I met with the Oregon Advocacy Center, they did share 6 cases with me, and many of those cases are disconcerting, of course, but there are also some ways that maybe we need to help school districts in how they make some decisions around whether or not the IEP is properly written, whether there are backup supports so that parents understand what could happen if certain behaviors occur that are out of control in the school.
Thank you very much.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you know how many schools have resource officers or a police officer in the school itself on a regular basis, and the contacts that they make with individual kids, if those all have to be recorded? And that would be a concern.
Representative Flores, members of the committee, I can't give you an exact number of those. We don't keep that data at the district level or at the state level for districts, and I think it varies amongst school districts and the communities in which those schools are.
Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How do you define that disability? It is that a physical disability or a mental disability, or how do you define that?
Representative Flores, Representative Lim, when we talk about a student with disability that qualifies for special education services, there are 13 categories in the federal special education law, individuals with disabilities education law, and they range from learning disabilities, severe emotional disturbance, deafness, blindness, students with autism. So there are 13 different categories, and yes, they do include some with severe emotional behaviors.
All right, thank you.
Ms. Ladini, where would we have access to that list of 13 different categories?
I can get that for you. I'll give it to Mr. Keller.
Thank you. I have a few questions for you, if you don't mind. But in that list of categories, is the problem brought forward dealing with drug-addicted children, and is that considered a disability?
Representative Flores, members of the committee, drug-addicted children per se are not identified as one of the 13 categories, but oftentimes those drug addictions may manifest themselves into a disability. We do know from research that learning disabilities could be one of the outcomes of drug addiction. There are those kinds of relationships, and as you go through an assessment process, you wouldn't look at the drug addiction per se, but you'd look at the categories of the 13 categories, like a learning disabilities or whatever other health impairment might be another one.
I guess either because of my privilege or lack thereof that I serve on the Judiciary Committee, and we're beginning to address the current methamphetamine problem and the significant crisis that is being faced today, and particularly in regard to young children who are in homes where meth is cooked in meth labs, if you will, and the contamination that is affecting infants and young children and the disabilities, brain development and learning disabilities. So that's kind of the premise of my question, and I think we're going to be having to have more discussions about that in the education arena. Do you think Oregon schools are using police inappropriately?
Representative Flores, members of the committees, it's a very good question. Overall, I would say they are not using them inappropriately. We may, as an armchair decision maker, decide that that might be inappropriate and say, why didn't they do this? But in the heat of the moment, when you're in the school and you're considering the safety of a lot of children and also the protection of the child who might be acting out, I don't think it's up to me to make that decision of whether it was appropriate or not.
Okay, that's legitimate. Have you heard concerns from parents or children's advocates with disabilities that there has been an inappropriate other than the six instances that you have made reference to?
No, I have not personally. We have not had any formal complaints brought forward other than the one 4 years ago that we had where DeFalta District did inappropriately do call in the police and handle the situation. Again, it was a matter of taking a look at an IEP. And again, when it gets to that point, of course, we're also trying to do some resolution between the parent and the school district, and that's understandable, and to try to come to some kind of mediation so we can, again, serve that student appropriately.
Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Latini, do you think there is a problem? Do you think it's appropriate to have policies in place so that schools could be presumably held accountable if they go outside those policies?
Representative Flores, Representative Shields, I believe districts should have policies to keep their schools safe. I'm not sure that this bill is a bill that would make a whole lot of difference in the behaviors that might occur for students and make behaviors improved or teacher training improved on how to avoid some of those occurrences.
Representative Lim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the issue is more complicated as far as I'm concerned, and that we need to find out why certain times certain person with a disability act in that way. What triggers them to act that way? We need to study that issue and try to prevent it instead of a problem happened and then just to try to call peace or police officer, try to handle it. That's the last resort. But we need to understand sensitively now the psychology of the people with a disability, make sure that the children, the student, the peers don't look down or make inappropriate remarks. That kind of small things could trigger the person into the rage. And also I just want to mention the school nowadays is more diverse, and we need to be more culturally sensitive and racially more sensitive. I think we need to be concerned of those things when in considering overall safety of a school environment. Can you make some comment on that?
Representative Flores, Representative Lim, I cannot argue with you at all. You made some very good statements that I definitely agree with, that it's an ongoing thing for school districts to continue to be sure that the staff they employ and that the district employs as administrators are continually sensitive to all of those needs of all of the students that enter our schools.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Latini, this is the document to which you referred, Behavior Crisis Response Guide, Ideas and Strategies for Use with Students with Disabilities, Model for Schools, Families, Law Enforcement, and Social Agency Collaboration. I was looking for a date on this. Now, you just mentioned that there has been some statewide training, train the trainers, looking toward de-escalation strategies. So is this pretty hot off the press and the training pretty current?
Representative Flores, yes, it's fairly hot off the press. It was 2 years in the making. We contracted with the University of Oregon and with a school district to help us write that so that we had ground level involvement in it, and the training began this fall. They piloted last year, I should say, in Woodburn School District and two other school districts, and then we did some re-editing of it and then did the massive training this fall.
So it would have been September, October 2004.
Right.
So you're in the beginning phases.
Right.
And this would be considered existing standards or requirements for schools and the use of police?
Expectations, right.
Okay. Are there any other pre-existing standards or requirements for the use of protocols for the use of police in schools?
Not through our office.
Okay. Do you collect any data in regard to that?
The only data that we would collect, Representative Flores, would be any of the information on suspension and expulsions and the reasons for those, but not whether how they handle those situations.
Okay. Do you do any follow-up work when there have been police called to intervene in these situations with children with disabilities?
Representative Flores, we would respond if we got a call from a parent or somebody asking for help. Otherwise, statewide, we would not know those situations. We have a complaint investigation team in our office, and we would certainly look into anything that that we got contact, made contacts with.
Okay, but you currently have no follow-up strategy in place.
Other than if we get phone calls, then we would follow
up. Gotcha. And so with this guide that you've done a pilot project and began in fall of 2004, that's going to be then required training for schools to undergo, and how, what's your phase in? What's your rollout here?
Flores, what we've asked contractors to do is conduct trainings with each of the school districts or educational service districts and have them put a plan together, and they get funding to help pull their community teams together so that they would then work together on those strategies and on those plans.
And time frame for that would be?
I do not have one at this point. They're just starting that. So,
okay. Representative Dolan?
Follow up, Madam Chair, to your line of questioning. This is the normal and customary procedure when rules for handling special needs students come up, is to develop a rule, disseminate the rule. And that, my assumption is, and I don't know that, is that that rule's, knowledge of that rule gets through the system pretty quickly, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes, it does.
Because you've done this, particularly with special needs students, many times. In fact, probably many times in a school year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking of legal precedents, Department of Education rules. It's not uncommon to do this at all, is it?
To
disseminate rules, and they do get pretty wide. They get statewide very fast.
Absolutely. When rules are disseminated through the Department of Ed and Special Education, they then are into a system with us for policy and procedure review. We expect that districts have the policies in place, and when we review them for compliance, we would review those.
Well, just for clarification, are you referring to the implementation of administrative rules?
No.
And the time frame, therefore?
No, I think we have a special, and I want to pursue this just a little bit. With special education, it is almost a school within a school and has its own set of rules, and its rules change somewhat differently than regular ed. And so those people are queued up and ready to respond fairly quickly to changes in special ed procedure. I think that's a true statement, isn't it?
Representative Flores, Representative Dolan, I hope it's a true statement. Knowing and having been in the district and knowing when rules would come out, we would have access to hearing that they're being proposed. We'd have some chance for feedback, and we'd be waiting for them to be passed, and we'd know when the effective date is and work on them.
Are you breathing?
We should have probably disseminated the rules on SIM and CAM through the special ed people.
Representative Shields and Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Latini. I heard a colleague of mine, he's a social worker, talk about a case where a child at Buckman School was tasered. I was stepped away. Was that one of the six cases that you mentioned, or have you heard of that case?
Representative Flores, Representative Shields, I'm very well aware of that case. It was not one of the six cases that was shared with me.
Okay. Do you think that these procedures here, if in place, would have prevented that from happening?
Representative Flores, Representative Shields, without divulging the confidentiality of the nature at the time of the information shared, I do believe the school did everything that they could in that situation. I can't speak for the taser. I can speak for calling the police and for support.
Thank you.
Representative Roebling.
Yeah, I'm just following a little bit up on what Representative Dolan was talking about. Much of what we do in special education is directly comes to us from reauthorization, IDEA, and the other federal laws. And then as court cases take place, new findings happen and new rules come out. And so there tends to be a channel of communication through special ed directors in every district with teachers that gets that information disseminated fairly quickly, because the laws change by interpretation fairly often. Is that not true?
Absolutely right.
Yeah, it just keeps going on and on.
One more thing.
Representative Lynn?
And I'm trying to come up from the different perspective. We are trying to teachers and police officers try to teach and how to deal with these problems. But what I'm thinking, we need to educate our children. And because the problem rise out of among children themselves. So if we teach our children and that they're more sensitive on, especially to the individual or disabled, and then a different colors, different culture, and acceptance, I think that's more wise and proper approach to handle the situation, instead of trying to that the police officers how to handle the situation. I'm looking at the broad picture instead of just one part.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you.
Ms. Latini, just a couple of more questions. Regarding this training curriculum and the rollout, which is yet begun, and a very small number of schools or school districts have been trained, so we're...
Representative Flores, I believe there were over 67 school districts represented in the room when I welcomed the trainers in the room. So it was a hefty group of people to go back to their communities.
Okay. So 67 school districts have received the information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And to your knowledge, are districts required to have any policies regarding the use of police for situations such as we're discussing?
I'm sorry, I can't answer that question. I don't believe that there's anything in rules that I'm aware of for general education or special education to that effect.
I might be able to answer that for you. We went through a time when there was DARE officers and then officers in residence, and most schools had one, and as a result, most of the schools I'm familiar with developed a policy for officers on campus. And one of the things we found was that the relationship, in my case, built between the officers and the students, produced excellent results. Our officers were no longer viewed as an adversary. Small crimes in our communities could be solved between an officer and students. We found the system to be very workable. It concerns me that we had six incidents where an officer used force, but having had a 275-pound identified student that no one could restrain, I certainly don't know the circumstances in these six cases, but I do know that when a child that large gets angry, it is very difficult to control them.
Representative Roblin?
Yeah, I would concur. We've had some situations, and I don't know. I think the positive thing is the district has had an officer on campus, and one of the rules was another officer coming to campus went through that person who actually knew more of the kids. That made for much better responses. Was the officer on campus actually did know many of the kids in the situations, and the response was usually dealt with because that person interceded. And if the school felt needed help, other people would come. They made sure that that person talked to the other police officers before anything was done. So I agree. I think that districts that have had those kind of relationships with their police departments do have policies in place. Sharing information and records, which is a difficult one, and other kinds of stuff have to all be worked out. But I don't know if there's any statute other than the information and other kinds of statutes that we have to work on.
Well, in one of the cases cited by the Oregon Advocacy Center, would you give us your thoughts on whether an intervention plan for an 8-year-old child should involve removal from school by police?
Again, sitting here as an armchair decision maker, Representative Flores, it's hard to say what goes on in the minds of the school and what's happening at the time. As you probably are aware, there are several severely disturbed students in some cases that are not placed in the right place, and sometimes those students are in public schools. And hopefully people would be able to go through the right processes to get that child the support he needs. But I don't know. I can't answer sitting here with an 8-year-old child. Sounds harsh, and yet I don't know that I would not want to second-guess the school district on that. I would hope that it would be, as Representative Lim said, the court of last resort.
I realize I'm asking you some subjective opinion, but this is a significant issue. I mean, so if we can kind of draw together, that's kind of where I'm trying to go. Do you think that perhaps a concern in utilizing police to remove an 8-year-old child would have evolved or devolved to a consideration of a liability issue?
Representative Flores, that could be a case. That definitely could be. I have no concerns about much of this as far as we have calling police in to support school districts. The concern centers around a law that states that school districts have to have policies and procedures that the department has to approve, and data collection around some issues that I don't think will improve student achievement or student behavior. I would prefer looking at it from the training point of view of training staff to avoid some of these instances.
Well, what is the Oregon Department of Education's role in ensuring the safety of children, especially with disabilities?
From our end, one of the systemic trainings that has been going on for a long time and will be escalated this year with the new IDEA allowing us to spend more funds on it is something called Positive Behavior Supports, which is a systemic way of dealing with supports and poor behaviors. And again, teaching all children about the way to appropriately behave in school and the way to support kids that need extra support. It's a very popular program in Oregon. I don't think that we have it systemically entrenched, and I think that there are the things that we can do, and that's the part that I would intend that the department on my end would strongly support this coming year as the new IDEA rolls out.
Representative Dolan,
please. Thank you, Chairman Flores. With any student and with any behavior, no, I will go back to special ed, your area of expertise. When there is an incident takes place for which we have no policy, and I hope there's a few left, is there a system available? If we didn't have, before we had this manual, in the special ed documents, hasn't there always been a system available for redress when a parent thought that either the school or students or another parent or another child, isn't there an avenue of redress available right now?
Representative Flores, Representative Dolan, there is through the IDEA process informal complaints. The parent can ask for an investigation if they are violating any services for inappropriate public education, which a removal may address in any of the areas of special education. They can, yes, if they feel their child is being discriminated against. Either through the IDEA process or through investigations from Section 504, Rehabilitation Act, we would conduct an investigation.
So, and in any of these six cases, was that avenue of redress used, do you know?
Not to my knowledge, but those happened before my time.
I see.
I think I have a last question for you. Now, back to the rollout, the time frame, and I think I understood you to say it's contingent upon certain funding and so on. Funding is a component on how we get the rest of the training done. So you indicated there were 67 school districts present when you introduced this program. Mm-hmm. And what I'm going to ask is, when will the remainder of the 130... some school districts
being trained? I apologize for not having the person here who's conducting the training. She's also a special services director in a school district, and we've talked about the next level of training, and she's the one that organizes it. Funding for this particular training has already been set aside. We're not concerned about that. Some of it is a matter of time of getting the right people together and getting the consultants from the University of Oregon on the schedule with them to do the training. She does fully intend to have that done. When I will get a timeline from her and get it to you.
Thank you. Okay. Any further questions for Ms. Latini? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have Alan Tressiter and Bob. This?
Jim.
JUNDEP. Okay, that's exactly what it says. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alan Tressiter. I'm here today representing the Oregon Advocacy Center, and with me is Bob JUNDEP, who is the executive director of the center. And we want to talk with you this afternoon about House Bill 2571. It is a bill we introduced, I would say, with some reluctance. We would much rather have done this in a cooperative manner with the Department of Education and school boards and school administrators. Two-thirds of that group has been very cooperative with us. The school boards, I'm authorized to tell you on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association that they will, in fact, adopt draft model policies in the use of police officers on school districts and disseminate that to all of their members. That's the kind of cooperation we, quite frankly, would also like to find from the Department of Education. But before I talk more about that, I'd like to have Mr. JUNDEP have some testimony he'd like to give you, and then we'd be prepared to answer any questions you might have about issues involving police being called to local school districts.
Chair Flores, members of the committee, my name is Bob JUNDEP, and I'm the director of Oregon Advocacy Center. For those of you who don't know our organization, we are the state's protection and advocacy system. We're mandated by federal law to investigate allegations of abuse and neglect of children and adults with disabilities. And since 1977, we've represented families and disabled children in special education matters across the state. In all of those years, reports to us of incidents in which police were used by school districts to control the behavior of severely disabled children is a very rare event. However, in the past 2 to 3 years, we've had an escalating number of reports come to us, which has caused us some concern. Our initial reaction to that was to try to collect information, to try to determine whether these were isolated incidents or they were part of a pattern of change in terms of how school districts were dealing with these situations. We investigated both in-state and nationally and talked to parents of children with disabilities. And as part of that process, we were able to find some additional cases in which police were involved. And we also found that there has been an increasing incidence of use of police in schools across the country, although it was very difficult to find specific data in terms of the exact numbers and prevalence of these occurrences. Probably the first case that I recall in which I became involved had to do with something that happened right here in Salem, in which a child with severe disabilities was prosecuted by the district attorney's office and for behaviors which at least appear to us, and we're not criminal attorneys and we weren't involved in anything of that, but at least appeared to us to be behaviors that were related to the child's severe disabilities rather than any type of activities that they had intentionally done as a child without those sorts of cognitive problems. In talking to the district attorney at that time, which was Dale Penn, we had the sense that really they hadn't evaluated the types of disability factors that I'm mentioning. They had merely responded to a request from the school district. And they offered to work with the school district to make sure that inappropriate actions weren't taken. However, we've seen continued examples across the state, both in small school districts and in large cities in which this has occurred. Our next thought on this was to go to the Department of Education to say, hey, are we seeing a real problem here? Are these isolated incidents? What can you tell us? We did meet with Ms. Latini and staff, and their response to us was that they, in fact, felt that there was a problem, that it was an increasing problem. However, they were also unclear as to the extent of the problem, that they had no data on the problem. And what we were told was that they had no mechanism to collect that data, and they had no intention to collect that data in the future. However, they did inform us that they were working on a training curriculum, which you've heard about, and offered to allow us to review that curriculum, which we did, and frankly, we find that to be a pretty good curriculum. It contains some excellent recommendations in terms of how to proceed in those situations. We also learned that, in fact, school districts don't have a requirement to have policies in this area. Some may not. And so that it was sort of a mixed bag out there, as far as we could tell. We asked for a time frame in terms of a rollout of the training and whether that training would be required of all school districts and any implementations would be required. We were given an unclear sense of what the rollout was. We were informed that there would not be a required, that school districts are not required to participate in the training and were not required to implement any standards that might be recommended in the training. This led us to believe that there would be some benefit if school districts did in fact have policies. And really, because by developing policies, it would put certain school districts that perhaps hadn't given a great deal of thought to this matter or had what we feel to be an inappropriate view on the matter, that they would address it square on, and certainly with the aid of these training materials would be able to come up with a good policy. Now, I've given you some examples in my testimony of incidents that we've seen, and I want to highlight just two things about those. I don't want to repeat them, but these are the types of things that give us concern. On page two, there's an incident that occurred with an eight-year-old. We are continuing with that school district to talk about a behavioral plan and for the child involved, and the school district continues to insist that calling police if there's an episode is an appropriate part of a behavioral plan. Now, we don't contest that calling police when things get out of hand may be absolutely necessary, and safety, of course, is the bottom line for any school, for all the children and the staff in the school. But for a professional special ed staff to say that part of their plan for a child with a severe disability with problems controlling their behavior is the use of police, that's part of the professional behavioral plan, we believe, is inappropriate, and we don't believe that you will find a special education professional who would say that that is an appropriate portion of a behavioral plan. The second incident we wanted to refer you to is the one that was mentioned earlier having to do with a child who was tasered in class. We received a complaint about that incident and began an effort to try to find out what happened. We had a number of complaints about it. We view our role as just having an independent oversight role to find out what happens and whether circumstances are appropriate. The school district has fought us tooth and nail over revealing the records in that circumstance. It's been 4 months since we received the complaints. We've still been unable to get those documents, although we believe we're on the verge of being able to take a look at them. And this gives us concern because we're afraid that there is no meaningful oversight in these circumstances. As you, from your own questions, you just heard, confidentiality forbid Ms. Latini from giving you any details of that incident. We're hoping that, in fact, that this child did have a behavioral plan, that the behavioral plan was implemented properly, that the staff were well trained in order to deal with behavioral problems, and that the police were called as a last resort, and that when the police came, they knew what types of steps to take in order to de-escalate the child's behavior rather than using severe force. And we hope that all of that's true. We just don't know. And that continues to give us concern. These are the reasons that we brought this bill to you for your consideration. I might add one last thing, which is that what we are suggested with the bill was that each school district have policies And then we elaborated in terms of the types of policies that we felt would be appropriate and added a piece that would allow for some data collection so that if we don't have a problem here or we do have a problem, at least we could identify that. We stand ready to work with school officials to moderate the details of what would be required or even to just have a bill that basically said you should have some policies and implement those policies. Really just anything that will get this on the table and create a mechanism so that we can take a look down the road in terms of whether school districts are using police appropriately or not. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could just add a couple of items. I think our desired outcome here, as Bob said, 5 or 6 years ago, this wasn't an issue. Just simply the instances of police handling young children with disabilities was exceedingly rare. It is not as rare, although still rare, as it was then. And what we want to do is get policies in place and get data in front of you so that we nip this in the bud or take this head on so that all school districts have the tools they need and that special education teachers and administrators and parents all have policies in place so that each party understands what's expected of them and what steps they need to take to avoid any further. We don't want to get to a point where calling police is okay, where that becomes the norm. That just doesn't seem like a good use of dwindling police resources or dwindling education resources. So policies by every school district with the help of the Department of Education to gather statistics so that we have a picture that we could bring back to this committee. Perhaps you could ask us to all come back and report to the appropriate interim committee with draft policies and statistics from districts. My colleagues in the School Boards Association and school administrators suggest to me that that would not be difficult to do, is to find a number of, I don't want to speak for them, but I think that's the message I got, that gathering data is not a terribly burdensome thing for them to do. But if we could just get from you some tools to work aggressively on this issue so that we're not back here in 2 years telling you there weren't 6 incidents, there were 16 incidents or 60 or whatever that number could be. So I think now is a good time to develop some policies, get some statistics, and help give school districts, school administrators, and parents the appropriate tools they need to address this issue. Thank you.
Representative Shields.
I would just have a comment more than a question. On March 31st, I believe the Attorney General will be discussing use of force issues in judiciary, and it's a very important issue in my district particularly, and certainly in the city of Portland. And I think anything we can do to de-escalate the risky situations that we put police officers in, I mean, they're not social workers, and to expect somebody, a police officer, to go into a situation just by definition increases the risk of the situation getting out of hand, even though, you know, the police officer's intentions are very, very, very sound and very good. So I would just encourage you, because I'm very concerned also about that taser incident. I mean, the human rights groups, Amnesty International, are all looking at taser use and determining whether or not it's appropriate. If we have children getting tasered even a couple of times a year, it wouldn't be a surprise if one of them died because of that taser use. So thank you for your work on this.
Representative.
It would seem, I may be at the comment stage, but we've heard from the Department of Ed that they'd be prepared a behavior crisis and response guide, and that guide, by your statement, is an excellent start, and it covers the issues you're concerned about.
Chair Flores, Representative Dellen, that's correct. It does cover the subject, pretty well, actually.
It would seem to me, then, that a measured response would be to try this first before you ask me to substitute my judgment in this arena for the judgment on the ground. each case, I think that if we looked at each of the six cases, we would find that each of them presented a different set of circumstances. I would not want my teacher or my administrator running to the policy book. I want them to respond. They're in a very difficult situation. Some of them probably abuseful, but I'm going to ask again, are there avenues or remedies available less oppressive than legislation for people to take?
Madam Chair, Representative Dahlin, yes. We're not asking you to pass this bill. I'll just be up front. We are asking, we're presenting what we believe has a possibility of being an increasing problem.
What then, if you're not presenting legislation, mm-hmm. what do you want me to do?
I would like it very much if this committee would direct the Department of Education to work with the Advocacy Center and school districts to adopt, first collect data that could come back and report to an interim committee on the incidences of use of police on school district grounds. And secondly, to develop uniform and consistent policies for school districts and staff to have in front of them so that they can deal appropriately with these incidents. You're right. Reading a 300-page policy book at the time of the incident doesn't work. That's not the point. The point is you would have the training manual to actually conduct training beforehand. I wouldn't expect any administrator or teacher to go running to the 300-page book when a child's acting out.
I think the book is going to be read. I know that this book will be read and will be studied and will be used, but I want it crystal clear. You're not asking me to pass legislation at this time.
I'm not.
Thank you.
Chair Flores, Representative Dahlin, I'd like to make one last comment, though, just to clarify a point. It's that there are due process mechanisms in place for parents to question IEPs or behavioral plans, as you know. However, parents, of course, rely upon the expertise of the school districts. These are complicated issues. Sometimes there's disagreement among parents in school districts about these matters. There's oftentimes resource questions that are very difficult to juggle. As you know, a very important part of responding to a difficult student is to plan ahead. If you don't plan ahead for an incident in which you know that an incident may occur with a student, then you're not going to be prepared to deal with it. A teacher may not have to familiarize themselves with a 300-page manual, but they should know for the student that's in their class what that child's disability is, what their behaviors are, that if you, for example, grab a child with autism, that they may react violently to being grabbed, and that you're going to be better off not doing that in the first place, and that should that mistake be made, what's the best way to de-escalate the situation. These are things that some training up front needs to be done, some thinking needs to be done about it, and planning. And if that's done, then we're all safer, and we all have a better school environment.
Does this manual do that?
This manual makes recommendations of how to do that, and for those school districts who choose to participate in it, I hope that they will implement those suggestions.
They will. They will. Special ed works that way. They've been sued into submission.
Representative Groblin.
I would just say I think there's two things. You mentioned that the staff that have those children should be, and I would contend that probably the whole staff in this school, because certain of these children, the reactions that they have oftentimes take place in common areas, not in classrooms. They happen in hallways and other kinds of things, and so all people knowing what to do in a particular child, especially for those identified kids that have behavior as part of their issue, is important. I guess the other thing that I look at what we can do and what we should do, and I think I've heard some suggestions that make some sense to me. It is still frustrating because I also noticed that you mentioned the last couple of years it seems to be escalating. I would contend that has to do with the student-to-child ratio in our schools. The fewer adults that we have and the more kids, the more opportunities for those things to start happening. The emphasis that we have placed on testing and some other kinds of things and academic things as opposed to some of the other things that teachers used to do in classrooms with kids about how to get along and do things have taken a back seat to some of those things. So I think there are a number of issues that in any kind of study we will find, if we start to look why are those things happening, we might come back to some of the same issues that we've been wrestling with here for a long time. How do we make sure that we have enough people in those buildings to make sure those things happen? I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Before you leave.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Latini, could I have you come forward for a moment, please? Now we're all at the table together. So having heard the discussion evolve, what would it take, do you think, Ms. Latini, to bring the Oregon Department of Education to a working relationship with the Oregon Advocacy Center?
Representative Flores, I assume I already have a good working relationship with the Oregon Advocacy Center. We may disagree on, I was happy to hear you didn't want this passed as is, and I'm back to you. I do not think that we're in disagreement about doing something to support schools in any preventive measures, taking a stronger stand on getting the training done and seeing to it that communities get together and take a look at the training. I don't see us being a part on that. I was a part on the fact of dictating that schools had to collect some additional information, and you're well aware of all of the information school districts are collecting under Individuals with Education Disabilities Act and No Child Left Behind, and under just the state guidelines and requirements at this point. I didn't know how this was going to help improve achievement for students.
Then asked another way, would there be a vehicle, a way, and or a willingness to do some of this data collection so that we might be able to begin a work in the interim on this issue?
Representative Flores, I would hope maybe the Oregon Advocacy Center could help us with that, and maybe even our Parent Information Center could help us in collecting that kind of information. In the meantime, I would hope that maybe we could, I do know that the advocate groups are being invited to a training to take a look at the manual and to have some feedback with us. But in addition to that, maybe putting together some training packages for law enforcement that kind of stand alone in addition to what the manual has in it that we could do together. So I would think there are ways to collect data that doesn't necessarily have to come as a data collection source out of ODE at this point if we're not sure what we're asking. But we have parents and we have advocacy groups that could help us.
So there would be a collaborative working relationship?
Absolutely.
Do you have any further comments, Mr. Tresider or Mr. Jundorf? Delph?
No. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to bring this issue to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Shields.
I would just ask you to that maybe we can have the group come back to us before the end of session and report on the dialogue that's taking place.
That's beginning and or ongoing.
Thank you, Deborah.
We will do that, and it will be my recommendation that that as we finish up the one session and move into the interim, that this will be an area that we will be having a dialogue.
And that'll
about.
Be about mid-May, is that right, Madam Chair?
Exactly, you got it. Time frame down.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else interested in providing testimony on House Bill 2571? Okay. Seeing none, then we'll close.
Go ahead.
The public hearing on House Bill 2571. Any further business to come before this committee? I was just going to say, seeing none.
I just wanted to just say during the session that next week our Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee is heading off to Baker City, and so we're leaving Wednesday at noon and won't be back until, and then we have Friday off, so I'll miss the Wednesday afternoon session and Thursday.
Thank you very much. I did have your note on that, and I know that these field hearings are going to take their toll on some of those of us that remain behind, and I will be having one the early part of April in Coos Bay myself, so understood. But I appreciate your keeping us alerted, both Mr. Keller and myself. So
thank you.
Appreciate it. No further business. We will and adjourned.
And